Welcome to St. Mark's Cathedral Conversations, a podcast featuring members of the St. Mark's Cathedral community in Seattle, Washington. These interviews feature lives of faith and adventure, service and connection. Here's our host, Michael Pereira.
At St. Mark's Cathedral, our programs with our children and the children's ministries are among some of the biggest outreaches that we have, and certainly among the most popular. And there's probably no better person to talk to about that than Kelly Moody, who joins us today for St. Mark's Cathedral Conversations. And we're going to talk to her about how she came to St. Mark's, her work with the children's programs and children's chapel, and also why this is important to her and why it's important to us as a community. So, Kelly Moody, thank you so much for joining us at St. Mark's.
My pleasure.
So just to start, tell us a little bit about you. We'll certainly get to the fun stuff in a minute, but tell us where you came from and how this whole St. Mark's thing got started for you.
Where I came from? Well, I was raised in Nashville, Tennessee, and church was always a part of my life. We went to mostly Baptist churches and a Methodist church as I was growing up. And so I think a lot of my most salient memories and formation of my own identity happened in churches. So as I started thinking about how I wanted to raise my own children, I thought pretty deeply about what it meant to raise children in a faith community and also to teach them something that was strong enough for them to be able to push back against when the time came for them to really need to do that. But not so rigid that they would have to do that in destructive ways. So when my oldest child was about five, I was teaching Sunday school in a Presbyterian church where we were attending in Tacoma at the time, and really wrestling with the curriculum and just wondering to myself, is this really what I want to be teaching my child about God and about faith and about what it means to be in a faith community? And started having that conversation with other parents and with other people in the church. And we actually ended up changing the entire curriculum for children. And we decided on the Godly Play curriculum, which was an Episcopal curriculum that we adapted to the community and to the theology that we were running with. So when my family moved to Seattle a couple of years later, I looked for a church based on that curriculum, actually, and to make a long story short, that is how I ended up at St. Mark's.
What did you love about the Godly Play curriculum so much so that you would seek it out?
So a lot of curriculum for children is instructional and didactic. And Godly Play is neither of those things. It's really experiential and liturgical. And while I think there is a place for rote kinds of learning and memorization and kind of just the interpretation being handed to you directly from an authority figure, what I love about Godly Play is that it really breaks open the sacred stories and the liturgical actions and these encounters that people have with God in the Bible and allows children to really experience them, not just in their heads, but in their hearts and in their bodies. And I thought that was profound and had the capacity to really make space for a child to develop a relationship with God that was a little bit freer.
Can you walk us through what a Godly Play session looks like?
Sure. So this is a curriculum that was developed by an Episcopal priest about 30 years ago now, but it's actually a spinoff of Maria Montessori's original Montessori education work and Sophia Cavaletti's creation of a curriculum called Catechesis of the Good Shepherd, which is a Catholic curriculum. So the primary features of any Godly Play session is that you have someone who is helping children cross the threshold and get ready to encounter God. And what that looks like is, as each child comes into the classroom, they're going to be met by an adult who greets them by name, who looks them in the eyes and tells them that they're glad that they're there, and asks them if they're ready to come in. And either answer, yes or no, is actually okay. And if they aren't ready, then that person finds ways to help them get ready or to sort of normalize sitting at the door and waiting until they feel like it's the right time. So all the children come in that way, and they form a circle on the floor. And there is a storyteller, and their role is not to be an authority figure or even a leader in that space, but to be a participant in the circle. So what you notice in a godly play session is that the storyteller is not looking at the children and engaging with the children. Everybody's focus is on the story in the center of the circle. And the story is told with manipulatives, and so it's a 3D version of the story that is concrete, so the kids can pick it up later and really move it around and imagine and play with the actual story itself. There are three main different types of stories in godly play that I mentioned to you already. One is sacred story, and so those are the stories of the people of God and sort of how they form their identity as the people of God and their relationship with God throughout time. The second is liturgical action. So it's a way of digging deeper into Eucharist and baptism and various liturgical shifts in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third kind of godly play story is a parable. So these are the teachings that Jesus gave us that are the most difficult to teach to children, and yet they are what we have direct from Jesus to teach our children with. And so it's a way of taking a really abstract concept that's still even difficult for adults to wrap their minds around, and just to create a way for them to engage and explore this idea of the kingdom of God or of what value means in the pearl of great price, or you know, who the sower really is in the parable of the sower. Just all of these kinds of big questions gives them a way in to the stories.
So taking the, at times, difficult concepts of our faith or difficult concepts of our stories and presenting them in such a tangible way for kids. Like you said, it's not simply rote. It's not simply somebody saying, this is what happened and then this and this. But there's that deeper level of engagement. What does that do for kids as they grow in a church community, but also as they grow up in the world outside the church?
That's a great question. And so I think our hope is that they would start to realize that the pattern that we use in godly play is the exact same pattern that we use in a Holy Eucharist every Sunday morning as adults, where, you know, you gather, you hear the story, you break open the story, you have time to pause and respond to that story and kind of wonder what this means to you, what God might be saying to you through this story, or how you should act or be in response. So all of these elements are practiced in a child-friendly way, you know, with the hope that they will continue in their faith in the broader community in the same way, but that they would be given permission to really think critically and engage deeply beyond just their head from the time they're small. And maybe, you know, if they're given that permission from the time they're small, then they won't forget it.
To empower them, almost, to, as you said, to think critically, not simply to passively receive, but much like what we do on a Sunday, where the liturgy engages all our senses.
Right.
even for them at that age of their development, to still engage them on a very comprehensive level like that. I like how you did describe it as liturgy for kids, because one of the things that we pride ourselves on is the history and the tradition and the richness of our liturgy. And if we don't make that accessible to kids, then we're doing it for all the wrong reasons. But this sounds like a really good balance between still, as you said, making it accessible and consumable for children, but at the same time, allowing them to, I've heard liturgy described as a scaffolding, so allowing them to climb higher and to climb deeper into why we do this. So it's not just arcane rituals, but there's real meaning behind everything that we do.
Certainly that would be my hope, yeah, that they would, and they do, you know, they'll come to me and go, oh my goodness, we have a table like that in the nave. There's a question in some of the stories, like, I wonder if you've ever seen this before, and they'll say, I have seen this, and it's really exciting to see them make those connections. I think it's especially exciting to hope that, you know, beyond the traditions, beyond the places that they will go in their life, that connection to God is theirs, and practicing making space for their relationship with God is one of my greatest hopes for them.
That's perfectly said. And it also connects me to another question I want to ask you, which is, why is this important for you? I mean, we know in an abstract sense, yes, it's important, but what makes this something that you want to do, you want to be associated with?
Yeah, it's funny, I think, you know, sometimes callings are clear in retrospect only. And certainly I didn't intentionally go down a path to end up being the coordinator of our godly play or our children's chapel or any of those things. But when I look back retrospectively, I would say that the things that make this so important to me are, number one, my own experience. So the power of community in my own childhood and the way that knowing that I could reach out to God and knowing how to do that at every point in my life has been salvation and grace for me. Number two, you know, as a parent, knowing how lonely and frustrating and hard it can be to try and shape my children in such a way that feels like I'm honoring their individuality, but really giving them the tools that they need to live fruitful lives. I had a longing to support families in that process and give them a place to be. And then the third thing I think was, you know, just practically, I was here and I saw a need and I thought, you know, I don't know if I can do this, but I'm going to try because it matters a lot. So,
was there a moment you went from knowing that you could try to knowing you were actually doing it, that this was an impact you were having on the community?
No, but, you know, maybe if you ask me in 2 years, I'll, in retrospect, be able to tell you.
Of course.
Just because I began my work here at the end of September, and it's just been a whirlwind of a year. And so I think in some ways I'm still reflecting on that shift, you know. But, you know, and I think maybe more than it being linear, like the shift, it's kind of cyclical. It's like, you know, you're going a little deeper and so you're trying something and then you're like, oh, look, we're doing it. We're moving in this direction. And then you're trying something else new and you're just kind of spiraling down maybe a little deeper every time. But, yeah.
So you mentioned you've been doing this since September, and I'd like to take a step back a bit. You talked about how you were in Tacoma, and well, when you moved to Seattle, you were looking for a church which had a Godly Play program, a connection to Godly Play, and that was how you found St. Mark's. Can you remember your first impression of St. Mark's? The time you walked into the nave or you talked to somebody here?
Just to be perfectly honest, church hunting with three children under the age of 5, which is where we were at the time, is not fun. No matter how hospitable the church is or how friendly the people are, I mean, it's just hard. And so we had tried a couple different places and spent some time at some of them, and we're just really wrestling with where we were meant to be. And so I think at one point my husband was just like, you know what, you go and you come back and tell us, because I can't do this anymore. So for a while I came to St. Mark's by myself and just observed. And I think that my initial impression of the building was that it was really impressive and that probably the people would be the same and that I wouldn't fit in. And what I discovered was Earl Grau, who was very kind and welcoming and really connected me in some really important ways to what was going on, but also spent a long time like talking to me about books and theology, and was just a great pastoral presence. And so, you know, that kind of hooked me. And then everybody that I met in the congregation was kind and humble, and the families were the same. Like, we were just coming together and doing something very simple, but yet very profound. And I was just drawn into that, I think. The McLaurins were here, and Ralph Ermoyan and Kristen Kelly. To me, Van, you know, the first year we were here, said, what are you doing for Easter? You should come over to our house. Like, just, you know, the way that we felt kind of embraced over that first year that we were here was really powerful.
And how long ago was that?
That was 2014 and 2015.
It's about three or four years.
Yeah.
How do you think St. Mark's has changed you in that time?
Oh, that's a great question. So, in every way possible, it has changed me.
Okay.
One of the ways is that I'm part of an EFM group that meets on Mondays for 2.5 hours, and I am the youngest person in that group by far. But what I found there was a group of really serious thinkers and honest people who were willing to give me the space and the and meet me where I was in terms of kind of unpacking my own struggles with my faith and sort of finding a way forward. That's been a really powerful place and community for me. I think that I have also found in the leadership a sense of, you know, kind of like what you're doing right here. If you have an idea, try it, run with it. See how it goes. So just kind of a freedom to try things that I'm not sure will work. Mm-hmm. but, you know, their support and trust and seeing if it'll fly has been really powerful. And I think that's changed me. And more than anything, I think the community. So the community for my kids and for me sitting on that rug with a bunch of families who are coming as they are and showing up every Sunday. And, you know, we're getting through it together. So
what's that like to welcome and to spend time with parents who bring their young kids, really young kids sometimes, to this place? I mean, you know, we've talked about it in the context of godly play, but I like that you mentioned the rug, that detail of being there physically in that moment,
yeah,
in that huge space. For you, what's that like?
Oh, it's like, it's heavenly, because I think it's sometimes rare to feel as a family with young children that there's a place for you in the church, particularly in traditionally built Episcopal churches where, you know, there's pews and,
yeah,
you know, that the concept is that you have to behave a certain way and act a certain way. And I think for a lot of families who are just needing to come to church, but not needing the judgment and expectation from a lot of people about how to be at church, that rug is such a gracious thing, because it says very clearly, you belong here and you can be however you need to be in this place. And so when I sit there on Sundays among children who are making friends with each other by coloring sheet, or who are super shy but are getting used to seeing each other every week, you know, everybody's kind of on a different place on their spiritual journey, even on the carpet. But I think there's just such a power in the micro communities of the cathedral, and I'd say that the carpet is a facilitator of that for the families.
You said that so well, that how everything connects, even for these kids who are on their spiritual journeys as they are. Because when we hear that phrase, and by we, I mean the adults, I guess, and the rest of the,
yeah,
congregation, when we hear that phrase, we're getting ready for the Eucharist, and so we're thinking about the prayers that go into it, and getting up, lining up, that kind of thing. But those kids are also a part of that. They're,
yes,
also on that journey.
Yes, and they are also getting ready, sometimes in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I would argue that it's really not that different. It might look a little bit different. You know, and one of the things that Steve has always said is children are welcome at the table to receive the bread. And certainly for those of us that are a little more traditional, we have balked at that and gone, well, they don't understand what's happening. And Steve will say, do you understand what's happening? So yeah, I mean, I think the more that we recognize that what children are doing on the rug is the exact same thing as what people are doing in the pews, and that we're all getting ready and receiving that bread with a humble unknowing a lot of times, then there's a lot of freedom to enjoy our community as it is.
That speaks to the heart of so much of what we want to do as a community. It would be completely disingenuous to say, yes, we're a community and here's a separate, different set of rules for kids.
Totally.
But to make them a part of what we're doing, an integral part of what we're doing,
yeah,
makes us stronger together. We've talked a lot about the work you do with kids, but you do a lot of other things here. A lot of other things. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I have done a lot of things here. Let's see. I have been on the Sanctuary Hub Steering Committee, which was a really unique and interesting build up of a ministry. I've been on the vestry, and what else do I do around here? Chalice bearer.
I have a list.
I've been a chalice bearer, and I still do that when I can, although certainly my work with families takes precedence.
Why do you want to do all these things? I mean, you can find so much, and I know it sounds like a cynical question, so I'll expand on that a little. You can find so much richness and depth in just one calling, and you have,
yeah,
absolutely. But what is it that draws you even further?
Oh, you know, I've actually been asking myself that question in the shower a lot lately. Like the things that you think about in the shower. And this is the thing for me right now is, I have a lot of broad interests at St. Mark's, and St. Mark's is a really broad place. There's a lot of opportunities to do a lot of different things. And so it's hard for me to know, actually, here's the vulnerable answer. If I'm just unfocused and just like, ooh, I want to do that. Ooh, I want to do that. Or if as I become more clear about who I am and what I'm meant to be and do in this place and in this world, that staying connected to the bigger picture is really important. And that rings more true to me, just that I really can't focus on just children or just families. So I have to be serving the chalice to the whole community in order to serve a small group very well, or that I have to be focused on social justice in order to provide pastoral care that's really meaningful to children and families. Like, I have to stay connected to all of those things in order to do any of them well.
Oh, no, I see where you're coming from. We have covered so much here, and I just have two more questions, and I promise they're easy ones.
Okay.
The first question is, can you tell us about the future, as much as you can, about the future of children's programs at St. Mark's?
I think there's some gathering interest in figuring out how we change what we call children's programs and do more of that integration, right? So I think it will still look similar, but some of the questions that I'm asking with a lot of our volunteers who are really the children's ministers in this place, the parents and the volunteers in Sunday school and in children's chapel are, you know, what does it look like to engage more people in the work that we're doing with children? Because we know that this work is needed more broadly than just in this little pocket. So how do we invite more people to and experience that with the kids and to, you know, be a door person in godly play or help us think through what the exact right song is for ordinary time in children's chapel or, you know, just little things like that, but that have a really big impact on children. We have a shift in the choir school happening this year that I don't know if Rebecca spoke about, but so there's some opportunity to really start thinking about what we can do during the week to build community and provide some more faith formation for children and for parents. And then the idea that I'm most excited about that I'm still working out is for years, at the cathedral, they had a cathedral camp in the summer for children and for youth. And now we have a choir camp, but we don't really have that cathedral camp anymore. It looked like a vacation Bible camp, I think. And we've tried a lot of different ways in the past 3 years to kind of rethink that and figure out what that could look like. And so one idea that I am working on with my children's pastors and ministers is, you know, what would it look like to do that in the evening and to have dinner for everybody in the family at the same time so that the kids could have some program time, but then everybody could come together for dinner and just hang out together. Yeah.
Yeah, that certainly would be a very exciting program to implement. And I'm sure there has to be a lot that goes into it.
I have two other things to say about that. One is, you know, we moved the child care center back into the main building.
Yeah.
And so another hope that I have in this next year is that the child care center will continue to be seen as a ministry and not just as like a service on the side kind of
right.
a thing, because it really is a front door. A lot of our new families coming in for the first time, that's the first place they go. And so we really want the whole parish to see that tiny little place up there as a ministry and as a way of providing hospitality and welcoming people into our community. And then the other thing that we've done and that we'll continue to do this year is provide ways of enabling children on high holy days, especially when it's really loud and crazy in the nave, just some way of kind of dialing down into their own sensory experiences of what's happening and to give them some space to reflect on that in a way that helps them attend to something more than being bored or, you know. So we've, Paige helped me with that this year. We've done that for 2 years now.
As we wrap this up and we talked about what you want to do in the future, we'll take one more look back in the past. And the final question I have for you is if there was a moment or even a series of moments at St. Mark's that has informed or influenced how you think about this place.
Yeah. Yeah, so certainly meeting Earl was salient for me, and I think salient for a lot of people as they come in the door for the
yes.
first time. The way that he ministers at that door is just remarkable. Another powerful moment for me has been when people leave the community, and that sounds kind of odd, but you know, we had a blessing of the space between us and them on Sunday for Malcolm and his family, and I've seen that happen a couple of times now, and it's always just very powerful to me that that we really mark those endings and beginnings in ways that are universal but also so personal. And I don't think I knew until I saw it happening in this place how much I needed that. Like, you know, it just enables, I think, a really healthy and hopeful transition for the people who are moving out in our midst, but also for the community that's left behind to go, okay, how are our lives changed by this person's life, and how will we go forward differently having known these people? And because really, when you think about St. Mark's, I don't know if this is true for you, but for me, it's, you know, it's like a living organism, this church. And when people leave physically, there's some aspect of their ministry and their worship that continues on with us.
Yeah.
And something about those blessings kind of helped me make that transition into thinking in that way.
I love asking that question because we get such different responses. People have talked about an experience they've had at a Christmas Eve service, the Christmas pageant. You mentioned Malcolm. He talked about sharing his poetry and the vulnerability, but also the empowerment that came from that. And you mentioning, you know, still with Malcolm's departure fresh in our minds as we have this conversation, but that even as we have to say goodbye, there's a celebration of the time he and his family were here, and also the continuing effect of their work here as well. It's not going to end with the passing of time, but it will grow richer as we learn from his work, as we learn from his absence as well, and how we can make this a place that celebrates all the comings and goings that we've had. And on the topic of saying goodbye, that does actually bring us to the end of our recording here. Kelly Moody, thank you so much for sharing so many things about why this community means something to the people here and why the work that we do enriches our spiritual experience and our spiritual journeys together. And hopefully your voice in this conversation is something that we will continue to remember and cherish. So thank you so much for being a part of this.
Thank you.
And that is good. 41 minutes.
Oh.
Wow.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. Our music was performed by Michael Kleinschmidt on the Flintrop organ at St. Mark's. Michael Pereira and Andrew Himes produced the podcast, and we hope you'll visit stmarks.org. So long.